This thing called life. Sounds familiar if you have a radio or a television set. In California, Dr. Hornaday established a program called This Thing Called Life on radio and television, and he was the head minister of the United Church of Religious Science in Los Angeles. He did just a great job. And he's the kind of guy that had a lot of people following him. He would fill the church every Sunday, and he would have, how many people did he have? He would have over 7,000 people in the service on a Sunday, which is pretty good. Now, his talk that he would give every morning, This Thing Called Life, would talk about topics that everybody is involved in one way or another, things that have made them happy, made them sad, things that have made them glad, and things that have made them upset, and things that have made them feel very satisfied with themselves. But the big thing that he talked about was an issue that I like very much. He talked about the issue of liking yourself. He said that if people could like themselves, that they'd be the happiest people on the face of the earth, if they could like themselves. But people have difficulty liking themselves. And the reason they have difficulty liking themselves is that they make a fatal mistake, which they have been chastised by God for from the beginning. God says, don't, and they do. And God says, don't, and they do. And God says, don't, and they still do. Thou shalt not judge. Now, is there anything in that statement that says, thou shalt not judge yourself? See, they think that you're not supposed to judge another, which is very true. But you're not supposed to judge yourself either. Because if you start judging yourself, you're getting into all sorts of trouble. What knowledge do you have to judge yourself? You have only yourself to compare yourself with, and so it's a very poor comparison, because you are who you are, and you're judging yourself on who you are, being who you are, and you could only judge yourself as being excellent. You really are quite well who you are. Now, yes, I know it's a play of words. Mm-hmm. But it's a good play of words. Now, when we judge others, we are the same miserable judges, because we are not universal in our awareness as we judge another. We're saying, you didn't do that as good as your brother. We're saying, you didn't do that as well as somebody else did. And how do we know if there were, let's say, 1,000 people who did it, and there were about 7 people who were right at the top, and all the rest were somewhere else in there. Do you know those 7 people who were at the top who did it, at the very top? Do you know them? No. Will you ever meet them? No. Why will you never meet them? Why will you never know the best? You will never know the best because you're judging by the worst. You're comparing everything to its incapacity, to its lack of success, to its lack of its greatness. And if you would compare, say, hey, he climbed Mount Everest, end of statement. And then you say, I'm going up tomorrow. Well, good for you. And I'm going up the next day. Good for you. And I just got back this afternoon. Good for you. You know? But we had a young man here, John Dainty, who talked to us about climbing Mount Everest. And he said, many people go up to the middle camp, or they go up to the base camp, which is quite a ways up, or they go up to steps up there, but they don't make it all the way. They don't make it all the way because they have not learned how to do a very important thing. And I think that if we could learn how to do that today, we would be gifted indeed. They did not learn how to acclimatize or acclimate themselves. They did not learn how to acclimatize or acclimate themselves to going up the mountain. The Sherpas, who are used to going up and down the mountain like a bunch of sheep, you know, roop, 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 taking people up with their loads. I mean, my goodness, they should get all the awards for going to the top of the mountain, because they do all the work that gets people there. And you don't know many Sherpas at all, because that's just a paid taxi service that they have. And they're good. They're very good. But it's a paid taxi. Why are the Sherpas so exquisite? Because they acclimatize themselves for their work. They can be at the bottom or at the top. And they can be barefoot. In sub-zero weather, they can be barefoot. And they are. Oftentimes. You see, they have acclimatized. They could be naked. And they could be doing just fine because they acclimatize themselves to it. Now, they haven't taught the visitors how to acclimatize themselves to it. They can't, because they were born into that type of a world. And their parents, as they were growing up, didn't teach them how to acclimatize themselves. That's something you don't teach a person. But they had them go here and had them go there with them. And they went up and down the mountain, and they did all these things. And as youngsters, they would be Sherpas for some of the people who wanted to go up and down the mountain and do great things. And it was just wonderful. They had good experiences. But in the process, they acclimatized themselves. And when they got home, they were just, you know, normal. No big deal, no big problem. When they get up the mountain, they were normal. No big deal, no big problem. They were doing just fine. They had a great trip. They had a great time. But they were living this thing called life in a very lovely way. The show we saw last night was about Tuck Everlasting. Tuck Everlasting, which was the name of the family. And the people in there didn't learn to acclimatize themselves. They had no idea about acclimatizing themselves. They just are. And they just are at whatever peak they were at the time that they are, at the time that they drank the water. Now, they didn't get better, and they didn't get worse, because they couldn't get better and couldn't get worse. They would always be just the way they were. They couldn't eat food or not eat food. They could do whatever they wanted to. They didn't need it. They couldn't drink water or not drink water. They didn't need it. Or breathe air, you know, getting down to basics, you know. Well, they knew how to live this thing called life because they just enjoyed being what they always were. And we can learn a big lesson there. We can learn a big lesson about living in this life and enjoying every single thing that comes our way. But if you're going to lie and cheat and steal, which is what we all have been trained to do, if you're going to lie, cheat and steal, then all of the benefit is lost. Now, what do you mean, lie, cheat and steal? Well, every time you judge somebody, you're lying. Because you're judging them based only upon your observation. Or maybe on someone else's observation, which is even worse. Not firsthand by yourself. But would you want someone to judge you for an action you did based upon an emotional commitment, which the other person had no idea about the emotional commitment? Years ago, children used to get spankings. And the other kids would come in the house as one kid was getting the spanking. What'd he do? What'd he do? You know, I don't want to do it. You know, what did he do? And sometimes they were told and sometimes they weren't. But they anticipated it for themselves. they acclimatize themselves in preparation for them getting one if they were found out for what things they did. And so you have to be very careful, because if you tattle on somebody else, if you tell what somebody else does, it usually comes around, and it comes around very strong, much worse than when you gave it. But these are lessons that we're learning. And what does it mean to tattle? That means you're telling somebody something that somebody else did. He took a piece of cake, you know. He went out in the kitchen and he stuck his hand in the cake and just took a big chunk of it and ate it. And he tried to make it look like the doggy print, you know, like the foot, the mouth of the dog, you know. And isn't that nice? Isn't that nice to tattle on him? Hey, the cake is a mess. And you come out there, and does it bother anybody? The cake is a mess? No, let's have some. Or does it bother anybody? The cake? Well, I wouldn't touch it. Who knows who's been there? The dogs, the cats, or whoever, you know? Well, you've been kissing the dogs and the cats for a whole lifetime. What difference is that going to make? Well, you see, when there's a little lie that's told, and the lie is Johnny did it, or Mary did it, or whoever, and then they did do it, but it was not for you to tell. I have been in many homes which were, I call, advanced homes, very advanced. And some of the kids would come in and do something they shouldn't do. Mommy, do you know what Johnny did? He did this, he did that, he did the other thing. And Mommy says, Paul, come here. Turn around. Bend over my knee. Womp, 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 womp. Don't you ever carry tales about anybody, especially not our family. Never carry tales. If I'm to know about it, I'll know about it. You don't have to tell me. Don't you ever tattle on any of your brothers or sisters or anybody. Unless it's a matter of life and death, where they might be hurt if they did something. But generally speaking, it's not a matter of life and death. And so this thing about life was brought home very clearly to those youngsters. And they learned very well that you don't do that. And these are the type of things that Dr. Hornaday would talk about. These are the type of things that he loved to share with his audience. And you can see how they were down-to-earth, homey things, and how his audience just sort of embraced him and loved him and worshipped him as a really significant teacher. Well, this is what you can do, too. You can be a really significant teacher if you will just take from your heart, take from your experiences, take from your life, the adventures that you have, and use them to tell your story. Now, Ellen asked a question. And did Jesus really say to his disciples, go out and preach and teach and heal? And Ellen is saying to me, Herb, you are a profound liar. Because in the minister's manual, you said Jesus told his disciples to go out and preach and teach and heal. And I don't think he did. I don't think he told them to do that. So in other words, you're saying that I'm a liar because I am quoting it from the Bible, and I am saying that it's true. Now, if instead of making a statement like that, you'd make a statement like this, I wonder what Jesus had in mind when he told his disciples to go out and preach and teach and heal. What did that mean in the words of the Aramaic language that was spoken in at that time? We perhaps can look at Lamsa's book, Bible, in Aramaic, and see how the words of Jesus were responded to in those days, and come up with a very interesting idea. And the idea we come up with, he may well have said just that, but he may have meant out of his catechism. And you know what his catechism is? Whatever he taught. What is our catechism here? Whatever we teach. It's the art and science of holiness, the song of the spirit, illumination. It's all these wonderful, and all of our tapes and seminars and discussions and writings and lectures by you guys too. You see, this is all part of the show. It's all part of this thing called life. And are you ready to become as famous as Dr. Hornaday? Or Emmett Fox? Or Ernest Wilson? Or Fillmore? Or Holmes? Or God? Are you ready? Or do you just want to be yourself and have fun? Live your life and not be and not have anyone look to you as an example, because you don't want to stop doing your silly things? Or do you want to just be a perfect example? I kind of think you want to be a perfect example. And that's why I think that this thing called life is your life. And no more lying, no more telling tales. Just telling the truth about yourself, that you're a wonderful, beautiful, fabulous person. And I love you very, very much.